Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in beautiful and hot downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
So I tried to do a little experiment this week.
Oh boy.
I know, right? So Amy and Charles have no idea what we're talking about today.
It's a little scary.
I know. But it's mellow. I decided, all right, so I knew I wanted to just have a fun talk about aquarium stuff instead of like, let's do this in depth. How hard can we hit a topic kind of thing? So this is light. This is fun.
Here's the thing, though. Yeah. You've been gone on vacation for a week and you come back and you're like, okay, guys, I'm ready to talk about something. That's a little intimidating. You've been thinking about this for a little while, maybe.
I wish that was the story, and I should tell that's I've been thinking of this for a week, and I got this big huge plan.
Just been churning about it.
But I just don't have that many notes.
You have notes though.
I have notes.
Jeez.
I have notes.
Okay.
Mostly it's just to try and keep us on topic. But really, the whole idea of this one is to only sort of stay on topic, because it's gonna go in all kinds of crazy directions.
Okay.
Right? But it's not that. I know you guys are dying with anticipation as to what this topic is, but it's not that big of a deal. We're going to talk about planet aquariums for the next hour.
Oh, okay.
I know, right? And Charles just went.
Oh, there he goes. Goodbye, Charles.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, boy. No. Just carefully writing notes.
But don't worry. I actually have in my notes. Oh, wait. Charles is tuning out. Quick, talk about breeding fish and using plants to do so. So that's going to be part of the direction. So what I did with my notes is some things to lead the discussion in some certain directions. But that's not what I want to try. This is an experiment with how we end up. So
you heard it first on Watercolors Podcast.
That's right. That's right.
As with everything.
I want to start out with kind of some funny little anecdotes and some of those funny little, like, people come into the shop with questions all the time. Mm-hmm. And some of those times we have to, I think I'm even going to say many of those times we have to go, okay, for the 147th time, here it is. And so I want to talk about some of those demystifying things and some of those strange concepts and some of those, like, come on.
Like, really?
Really? Yeah.
I got one, if you're willing to let me just jump in. Where it's
hey,
like,
jump in, man.
Where it's not really like, I don't think it's anyone doing anything wrong until you do it wrong. So I'm going to start off with the story of the first time I kept Crip.
Oh, I like it.
So it melted.
As they do.
I didn't know that.
As many people don't.
Hey, I got this plant from you last week and it's dead now. What did I do wrong?
Yeah.
Just wait. It'll come back. And you get this look like.
Yeah, my story is.
I already threw it away.
It died. Yeah. I thought it died. I pulled it out and then I went and asked.
Yeah.
And that's when I learned, well, you didn't kill it until after you threw it out.
Right. Right.
And that's one of those like.
Here's the thing with plants. What is dead may never die. Unless it is brown and mushy. If there's anything there, so many aquatic plants can just reappear.
Yeah, they turn to mush. Right? So if you touch any part of the plant and it's not mush, that part's still alive. My Aponogetans did that to me recently.
Yeah.
So here in the studio.
Those ones are pretty cool. The progression of that whole thing was really fun to watch.
Here in the studio, I have four 20-gallon long aquariums that are solely designed for propagating plants in different ways for points in my local aquarium club. That is why they're here. So I popped a couple of Aponogetans in there, and I believe they're Longipumulosis, but I'm not sure, which is kind of a problem because you kind of need to know that. But they were traded from a really cool aquarist that I know, and
pretty sure they're Longiplumulosis.
I think so. But the intention was to get them to flower so that they would reproduce.
Instead, they did something completely ridiculous.
They didn't flower and they still reproduced. Yeah.
They it's like, so in Crystal's book, I think she refers to it as live bearing.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it's a live bearing plant.
It almost grows like a little fruit with a little plant attached to it that grows out of it, you know, eventually.
Right.
And then all of the adults just like melted and died and dropped their little fruits. And now you have a whole bunch of little plants.
A whole bunch. Right.
It was really cool.
I know. I love it.
They're not supposed to do that.
They're not supposed to do that. And I didn't get a flower. I wanted a flower.
Yeah.
Because then I get a point for a flower.
Did any of them breach the surface?
No.
Yeah. Huh. No.
They touched the surface, but they didn't send anything up.
That's so weird. You'd think that if they found it, they would just flower.
Yeah. So Epeirogetans are one of those.
They're not swords, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. Epeirogetans are one of those plants that produce a little bulb-like. What? It's not a bulb. It's not a tuber. It's another name.
I've always called it a bulb. I don't know what it actually is.
It is actually a bulb. Anyway, but they formed the little bulb. The cute little mini versions of the bulb you get attached to a big Epeirogetan when you buy it in a store. Like 12.
Yeah, bulb plants are the best example of that. Because I get this all the time on like lilies, nymphaeas and stuff.
Yeah.
And those will do a similar thing. Like sometimes when you add them to a new tank, they just kind of die off. Or they'll like send up surface leaves. And then under different conditions, they'll just sort of like die back and disappear. But then there's that little bulb. And don't throw that away unless it breaks up, because there's so much potential for plants in there.
Sometimes they can even produce like 10 or 15 little daughter plants off of that bulb.
Yeah.
It's really cool to watch.
Always in different ways.
Yeah. So I'm going to set this up because, you know, I kind of blindsided you guys with this one. So I'm going to set it up with part of it is going to be almost like some interview questions, but not really.
I was worried we were going to walk into a pop quiz.
Well, now you just gave me a really good idea. I'm going to do that next time. Yeah. No, I want to.
That would actually be hilarious. We don't do a ton of prep for these episodes, but we usually at least like look a couple of things up.
Yeah, unless it's a taxonomy one.
You know, I'm pushing the idea. So at one of our little planning meetings for these, we wrote on the board, we can talk about anything for an hour. So I thought, hey, let's try it. And then let's see if we can actually get people to listen. So, by the way, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. We appreciate it.
We should say that. Mm-hmm. We've been getting a little bit of a bump lately. So I'm very grateful for everybody who's out there.
A little shout out to Reef Builders. They mentioned us in their podcast. So we're going to mention Reef Builders in our podcast. It is a great go-to place for what is new and up and coming in the reef gram hobby.
Yeah. And I listened to their podcast because we were mentioned on it, and it's fantastic.
Great.
So listen to that, too, if you don't already. If you found us, maybe you already do.
Thanks, Jake Adams and the other guy who was with him.
I don't remember.
I don't either. That's okay.
Jake's the one that called us, so.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, all right. So I mentioned briefly, like, in the store, we get these questions that there's always an obvious answer, and we have to carefully find a way to get people to agree with us that the answer is as obvious as we think it is. And I've got a couple of categories for that. And so let's talk about snails. Snails in the planted aquarium.
This one is actually frustrating for me.
Yeah. So I'll start with you, Charles.
Yeah.
Because I know how much you're just that intense planted aquarium guy. By the way, side note, he's not a planted aquarium guy. He tolerates plants because he likes them to breed his fish. Anyway, you were saying.
Yeah. I think snails should be considered an essential component to almost all planted aquarium.
Yeah, so what I want you to do is think of a specific example where a customer came in and said, oh no, I have snails in my tank. What do I do? Because I know we've all had that happen.
Yeah.
Right? Don't use names.
No.
But get specific. Like, yeah, this tall blonde guy with a beard came in and...
I had this guy come in and he said, I've had this explosion of snails. And... my exact response is, how much are you feeding? And then we talked that out. And then basically just the process of, well, if you have 100 snails, that means you're feeding enough to keep your fish alive and 100 snails. So rein that in a little bit. But if you have a tank with 100 snails, you probably need 100 snails.
Or change your behavior.
Or change your behavior.
Dramatically. Which actually, I would lean towards the...
But let's say...
Change your behavior.
Yeah. And then the conversation drifted towards, so what do I do if I have like 20 snails instead of 100?
Celebrate great snails. Come on.
Yeah. And so I really love to talk about the ellipse tank we have.
Yes.
Because that has Malaysian trumpet snails in it.
A fantastic population of Malaysian trumpet snails.
Yes. And I love them in that tank, specifically because we have that dwarf sag.
Yeah. You know, there are people right now that are yelling at their car radio or...
Yeah.
Like, they're yelling at us going, snails are terrible. What is wrong with you?
I'm going to start off...
Stop yelling. Let's talk nice.
I'll start off real gentle here. You're wrong. And because I genuinely consider those trumpet snails a critical component to the success of that tank.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because those snails are capable of aerating the soil in a way that I can't do without uprooting literally everything.
Yeah, that dwarf sag has really shallow roots, but the substrate's pretty deep, so it's super prone to anaerobic areas. Like, you could even see it. Those snails make a big difference in preventing that, turning over the soil, all of that stuff. Fantastic.
So, specifically to the example of Malaysian trumpet snails, I'm like, yeah, in this tank, they're necessary.
Absolutely.
I would adamantly argue that.
Yes.
Yeah, I've gotten a call on this one before where, like, somebody who's calling and they're trying... Like, in the same tone that somebody would call and say, oh, I got a fish and it ended up being sick. Like, where they're almost apologetic about accusing us of something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you know, I got some plants from one of your tanks and I think it might have brought snails in with it.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh, yeah, probably. All of our tanks have snails.
Of course, we love them.
And love them, hate them, whatever. If you're getting any plants from any tank and not getting only tissue cultures, you will get snails.
You will get snails.
It's inevitable. It's nobody's fault. And you always have the amount of snails you need.
Yeah. That, so, you know, that's that phrase, we have to focus on that phrase for a minute, right? Because I think that's like the quintessential talking point when we're talking about snails in a tank is you only have the snails you need. That should be like a catchphrase.
It's my catchphrase anyway.
I love it.
Because if you've got 200, dang, you need 200 snails.
Yeah.
Think of all the food that would be in there if you didn't.
Going right back to what Charles was saying with you.
Oh,
they're there for a reason.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. We maintain aquariums.
Right.
Because we, and I'm going to specify and say, when I say we, I mean us here at this table. I don't know about everyone listening, but we maintain aquariums because we like little ecosystems.
Yes.
Ecosystems are about biodiversity.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen. And you are cutting your ability to succeed off at the ankles by purposely trying to remove it.
Yeah.
Like
the first, one of the first rules of ecology is the more diverse an ecosystem is, the more stable it is. What that means is the more different types of organisms exist in an ecosystem, the more stable that ecosystem is. Opposite of monoculture. Anyone out there trying to maintain a lawn with just one species of grass? I don't want to get started on the...
We were just being quiet so we could wait for you to say it.
But you know how much work would have to go into maintaining that, because that is not... you're not maintaining a stable ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and if you want to maintain monoculture in an aquarium, you've got to do all the same stuff you do in a lawn. Weed killing, pulling weeds, constant maintenance.
Right.
Like, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Trim it constantly to keep it short and to make it spread out and all that stuff.
Poison. You have to use poison.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you do.
Yeah. When you go from, like, removing stuff like that purposely out of your aquarium, you are going from turning this, at least in my mind, you're turning this from a hobby to a chore. You are turning this from a more self-sustaining unit to something that needs to be babysat more and more.
Constant attention.
I will say, though, it's like anything else where if you take a problem that has already swung so far out of balance and are trying to reset it, like, let's say you do have 200 snails. If you cut off all the food immediately, that's when the snails will turn to plants. So
some species, yes, absolutely.
Some species, but even ram's horns, if there's no other food available, if you're removing all the algae, they may even pick at plants because they might have to.
They might, right. They don't want to.
That's the only time where I feel like manual removal may be necessary is just, it's like with algae, like to reset back to where balance is supposed to be.
Right, right.
And then, I mean, even one assassin snail would kill all of your snails, but not two, because they breed just like any other snail does.
And then you'd have 200 assassin snails, which also consume detritus. Really, the issue there is, what should you not do? Oh, you should not overfeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't let it get to that point to begin with.
Yeah. We try and drive this point home pretty regularly in the shop. If you have an overabundance of snails, you feed too much. Drop the microphone and go home.
Yeah, I want to specify and clarify. Not if you have snails, you feed too much.
Right.
If you have too many snails.
Oh no, I have snails in my tank and they've turned into a plague because that's what snails do. Yes, that's what snails do when they have enough to eat.
Yeah, a handful of adults, a smattering of juveniles, and some egg casings should be what you have.
Yeah.
And they'll lay eggs everywhere. Not every baby snail needs to survive to adulthood.
Right.
But it's fine to have 100 teeny tiny microscopic snails in there. Fish will eat those too.
Yep.
Wow. Nature.
Nature.
The circle of life.
Amy, you had the perfect catchphrase. How many times have people argued with you about that?
Every time.
Every time.
I don't overfeed.
What was the worst case?
I don't know. I don't have a specific story for that I can think of. It's because honestly, every time I get argued with, the thing that people don't want to accept is that maybe there's something they're doing that is wrong.
Right.
So it's tough not to have that come across as an accusation, but I don't have a good story where somebody like stormed out because because I told them that they were feeding too much.
Right.
Do you have a good story?
I don't have a good story of people arguing with me because that's the norm. I do have a good story. Like, it's a really short one.
Yeah.
Of someone reacting completely what I didn't expect. Walked through the whole, snails just happen. They're part of the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Explained all that. And she goes, oh, well, that makes sense. And then she went,
that's so good when that happens.
I know. I was just like, oh, wow. Okay. I was braced with like my notepad and ready to go.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And she's just like, oh, cool. All right. Yep. So I'm looking at some other plants today and I'm like, okay.
I do often get the, well, I don't overfeed, but man, my algae is out of control, which algae is food for snails. They like it.
They do.
And you're still overfeeding if your algae's out of control.
It's fun sometimes when you can, you know, you start out with the overfeeding talk because that's what we have to do here, right? And part of, we harp on this overfeeding thing because I think it's genuinely accurate that if somebody walks in the store and they say, I'm having a problem with my aquarium,
you can just say you're probably overfeeding.
Right. And I think I wish, you know, at some point I should start tracking it and we should see what that statistic is. I can think of three times in my 14 years now doing this professionally where somebody walked in the store and that wasn't the problem.
Yeah.
Or I should say that they were underfeeding.
Yeah, it has occasionally been you're overfeeding, but you have a good reason. So get over the snails.
Yeah.
If you're breeding and putting a lot in there.
Yeah.
And doing the water changes you need to be doing to maintain proper water chemistry, then you're overfeeding, but it's okay.
if you work the situation right and you get them to come to the realization, everyone's first impression, I don't overfeed. Okay. So let's just talk about some of the stuff. And then what I always do is I start out with that story, right? Like the only reason I bring it up and I, cause you don't want somebody to feel dumb. And if they are doing something wrong, they're going to feel dumb. We can't help that.
Yeah.
So I always
bring up. Everybody else is dumb too.
Right. I always bring up that 99% of the time it's overfeeding. And you know, this is the Midwest. It's heroic to overeat here, right? I have a problem. Have a sandwich. That was like how I grew up, you know?
Yep.
We're also just large bodied mammals. Like our perception of metabolism is way off.
Right, right. So I'll start going down that path with somebody of, you know, everybody does it. It's so often. Oh, it's so common, right? And then start doing some of those fun little anecdotes. Like, you know, imagine if you're choking. Because overfeeding is putting ammonia in the aquarium, right? And so our instinct as Midwesterners is, I have a problem, throw food at it. That's how you fix problems in the Midwest. That's what we do.
Sure.
And so if you're choking because you're in toxic gas, the last thing you want is a cheeseburger.
Yep.
Yep. Make them laugh. And then all of a sudden light bulbs start going off and splash. By the way, Splash is the dog that lives in the shop. Okay, not lives in the shop, but she comes with me.
She
gets to go home. Yes. She is a fantastic example of that because we get this constantly. My fish are begging because they're starving. How often have you had that, Amy?
Every day. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not every Amy, day. But every day. Every day.
Amy, your voice got deep.
Especially, it's always angelfish.
Right.
Like hand-raised fish that are used to begging and then getting food. You just got to like put the blinders on. Don't look at them if you're not feeding them.
Yep.
Yeah.
So begging fish are healthy fish, not hungry fish. Just like my dog. If I'm sitting down and eating a cheeseburger, she's going to beg for the cheeseburger.
But wait, you fed her 5 minutes ago.
I know, right? She must be starving. Fish are the same.
So how would you respond if you were having the conversation with someone? Because I had this once and I had to like step back and be like, and I managed to pull it through. But like someone, we were having this snail discussion and I was just like, oh, they're good. Well, I just don't like how they look. And I'm like,
sure, if it's a properly balanced aquarium and you feed less, you'll have way less snails.
Okay.
Yeah, I've gotten that a couple of times too. Yeah. Like, I just don't want things climbing around on my glass. And like, okay, well, like obviously we have different perspectives on the whole issue and that's fine. Like people can want different things out of their aquariums. So I do walk people through how to trap and remove them.
Or buy a loach or a puffer.
Exactly. Like most people can't just throw a puffer into their tank, but a lot of them can do a loach. A lot of them can do an assassin snail. Or honestly, I don't think anybody should buy fish for their tank that they don't want for the fish's sake.
True.
So just put an algae wafer in a cup and remove them and throw them away.
Right.
Like,
if you don't want to kill them, you can bring them back to us and we'll feed them to our puffers. Yeah. I mean, we'll put them in tanks and give them new homes.
And we'll name all of them.
Right.
Jimmy. As I put him in with a puffer.
Jimmy 2.
Jimmy 437.
Yes, if you don't want snails in your tank, we will take them.
We will take them. We will.
But we can't promise we won't feed them to something.
No. We can promise you we might. So what's the strangest thing you've ever heard someone ask you about a planet aquarium?
I've had a lot of people ask me if they need lights for their planted aquarium. So that's a pretty strange one.
That's kind of one of those, the answer is yes. Okay, what's next?
Yeah. Well, do you know what plants are?
Right. That's probably a good one.
Don't be mean. Yeah.
And a good segue into talking about lighting with the planet aquarium, because that's what do you need for planet aquarium? You need light, you need nutrients, and you need water.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
big three.
Yeah. You need some CO2 as well, but some plants don't need as much CO2 as others, and some planet aquariums don't need as much CO2 as other planet aquariums.
And if you have nutrients, theoretically you have CO2 too. Right. It just might not be injected CO2.
Man, I cannot think of a specific really weird question.
So lights. Let's talk about lights.
Okay, let's start. I'm flipping it on you.
Sweet.
Why do the lights that I buy here, why are they different than the ones that I would buy at the hardware store?
Spectrum and intensity, Charles.
Why are they so expensive?
Because they're better, Amy.
Why are they better?
Spectrum and intensity.
Also longevity.
And yeah, that's true.
That's longevity a big one. Right.
Yeah. It's like saying, so why is an iPad better than the $20 tablet I bought at Walmart?
Yeah.
Because it's an iPad.
There's actually a term in lighting technology called lamp mortality curve.
Band name, dibs.
Right. I like that. I need a moment.
Damn it. We are not going to have a better joke on tonight's podcast. Know, right?
So what lamp mortality curve refers to is how it's essentially is how long does a light bulb last? And with LEDs, our lamp mortality curves have gotten much, much longer because LEDs do last longer. But a lamp mortality curve, when you see 22,000 hours, that is where they fall in the spectrum of the lamp mortality curve. So if it says 22,000 hours, what that means is more than 50% of those lamps, by the way, the technical term in electrical people or lighting technology, when you're talking about a lamp, a light bulb is a lamp. A lamp is a fixture, right? So you put a lamp into a fixture, or you have fixtures that contain lamps if they're built in. So you'll hear me talk about lamp mortality curve. Has nothing to do with the little lamp with the little pull string. That's not a lamp. According to
a lamp must have a technology. Shade.
Yeah. No, that's a fixture, a lighting fixture that you put a luminaire is another word that you would use. And I don't remember what that topic means, but maybe that's the whole thing. Anyway, so lamp mortality curve means that if it's 22,000 hours, at 22,000 hours, more than 50% of those lamps, or as we would say, light bulbs, still work. That doesn't mean it's going to last 22,000 hours. Some of them are going to go considerably past 22,000 hours. Some of them are going to burn out or stop working the next day. But it's only 51% or over 50%. So it could be 50.1%. That's lamp mortality curve.
I do love having conversations with people because of the people in this conversation right here. I have spent the least amount of time with the company. I love having conversations where I walk people through the store and be like, through the store and say, that light's been here longer than I have. That light's been longer than I have. That light's been here longer than I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what one's been less than a year and caused us more problems than any of those ones combined? Those random black box lights somebody dropped off one day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know. There's that other brand of lighting that keeps falling off of their Bluetooth settings that are really starting to get on my nerves lately.
That probably aren't designed to be used 5 in a row in a aquarium store. But
they just get so confused.
Yes, they do get confused. They don't like being turned off.
No. No.
But yeah, good. When you're paying for aquarium LEDs, you're paying for like both reliability and a light that's proven and tested.
True. Yeah. So to me, the three main contributors to algae, right? We talked about nutrients. The other two are unbalanced intensity and duration.
Yeah. That's probably the biggest one lately to me is duration. People who have their lights on way too long.
Right.
I have my light on from 8 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night.
You do?
No, that's just me quoting a customer.
Who my favorite is, and this is the one by far that I get the most frequently. Oh yeah, well I guess usually it's like maybe like 9 to like when I go to bed, so maybe 9. Nobody goes to bed at 9 p.m., by the way. So people who say
some morning people do.
I turn on my light when I get up and I turn my light off when I go to bed.
Right.
And that's usually like 12 or 13 hours.
That's a great way to grow algae.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get the cheapest timer you can find at Home Depot. It's probably the most reliable.
Right.
Get a Wi-Fi outlet timer. Get something.
Something.
8 hours, 10 hours maximum. I don't care what kind of 24-hour ramp up, ramp down light you have. Get it on a timer, 10 hours maximum, even if it's dim during the last two.
So here's the science behind that. One of the really cool phrases around here that Amy likes is the fringe organism. And a fringe organism is an organism that lives outside of normal parameters, on the fringes of when things happen. And a classic is that slime layer between, like on a dock post, between air and water. That's a fringe in ecosystem, or fringe organisms live there. Those thick, gross bacteria that make that dock post slimy.
Yeah.
Algae is a fringe organism. It's not very good at photosynthesizing. It's opportunistic. So plants have a certain amount of time that they can photosynthesize. And when they're photosynthesizing, that light energy is there. And those plants are using the nutrients available and that light energy to photosynthesize. And they're taking it all up. All of it that's being produced, they're using it all. If all of those other things are in balance. Right? But they're only going to photosynthesize no matter where your plant comes from, no matter what plant it is, they're not going to photosynthesize past about 8 or 9 hours. And really, we can even think of 7 or 8 hours as kind of optimum.
Yeah, with some time maybe around to wake up and go back to sleep or whatever you call that when it's plants.
Right. But after 8 or 9 hours, and we're going to just go with 8. Let's just go with 8 because that's really what I think is the optimum amount of time your light should be on. Your plants are no longer using those resources that are available. So those fringe organisms now get to take advantage of that energy that's going into the tank, that light energy, and process those nutrients and grow algae. So it's a classic where, hey, I've done everything right. I've got high light. I've got CO2. I've got a densely planted aquarium. I don't overfeed. I've got a really nice balance of fish, and I'm still getting algae. What's happening? I can't tell you how many times we've come to the conclusion, oh, my lights are on 12 hours a day.
The analogy I love to give people in that situation is I'll ask them, so how long can you chew?
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Because it's like, they have to rest, the plants themselves, they have to rest at some point. They can't be eating. "Quote unquote," eating all day.
Right, right.
Like, no organism can do that.
Right. And on a level playing field in ideal conditions, plants win over algae every single time.
Absolutely.
The best counter to algal growth is good, healthy plant growth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Say
and that
again, Charles. Because
plenty of
that's,
rest time.
That just say it again.
The best counter to algal growth is good, healthy plant growth.
That's it. That just covers it.
And that makes it complicated in circumstances where somebody's got a lot of algae and you have to be like, you just pretend you don't have it. Get your lights on right. Fertilize the way you need to for plants. It's going to feed the algae, but like, you got to get over it. You got to get past it.
That's why some of these ramp up, ramp down lighting situations can be a challenge, because once that light turns on and starts putting that energy into a tank, the algae can start using that energy even before the plants can. So, and I'm not against ramp down lighting. You just have to count that in your 8 hours.
Yeah.
You can push it a little bit. You know, if you've got your 24/7 light or your high spectrum ramp up, ramp down programmable light, and you really want that to be on 10 hours, just make sure that that intensity during that ramp up is really low.
Yeah, controllable lighting is one of those things where, like, with great power comes great responsibility. Like, you've got to get it perfect, and you've got to, like, know what those spectrums are. If you get that off, then algae will slip into all those cracks. And I'm saying that as somebody who actually uses the Freshwater AI Prime. I love it.
It's a fantastic light.
But I run it as a low light tank, because I like the effects. But I don't know what the spectrum of the sun is. Like, like, I don't have that godlike power to be able to determine which light. You know, you can use presets, but I set it the way that I like how it looks. I keep it low, and I keep low light organisms. Because to me, it's for that tank, it's about the whole mood of it. It's about the setting and not necessarily about propelling as much plant growth as possible. If you want as much plant growth as possible, use a light that's perfectly designed.
Right.
And that's why we use Twin Stars.
Use the Twin Stars, just to say,
Because it's perfectly designed.
Yeah. But keep it on for 8 hours.
Yeah, keep it on for 8 hours.
Don't go longer.
And if you're not using the intensity, get a dimmer.
Yes.
So do we have more questions from you?
Well, I certainly can have some more questions. Why do you have questions for me?
What are some other, what can we ask Ben for stories on? What are some other common planted aquarium questions?
One of the funnest questions that I get from people sometime is, how do I stop my fish from eating my plants?
Oh boy.
There's a very easy solution. Take the plants out.
Or the
or
fish.
Or take the fish out.
Honestly, I think my solution might be even less popular. Grow things the fish like to eat more. Algae. In my specific case, that is the answer.
Oh, for your buffalo cichlids,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like for a lot of those fish that may eat plants just to have something to pick on. So like my cichlids are a good example. Some of the more green-favoring barbs.
Some of the rainbows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't have algae growing in that tank, the fish might pick at plants some. I don't consider algae always a bad thing.
Right.
If that's my goal.
Right. If you have silver dollars,
get over
luck.
It.
Yes. But I feed them plenty. So why do they keep eating the plants? If you keep lions with a whole bunch of lambs, it doesn't matter how many steaks you throw at them. They're going to eat the lambs.
I recently read a Reddit thread that was like zookeepers telling just absurd stories they have. And I was literally crying, laughing, reading this one about the zookeeper talking about he was giving a tour and like they were at the lion exhibit and like just a wild deer just fell in.
Oh, man.
And of course all the kids are just freaking out.
And as a keeper, like, there's nothing you can
do. There's nothing you can do.
What do you want me to do? Like, jump tackle a 300-pound lion and tell it to stop?
Like, you should shake a stick at them.
Use their well-ingrained training commands and tell them that they need to go back into the habitat.
Right.
Like, no. They're like, this is the best day I've had in years. I'm going to take advantage of it.
Like, for perspective, just for sake of closing out this story.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to separate two fighting cats?
No.
It's hard, and they weigh like 10 pounds.
Yeah, I would not try.
So imagine now it's the cat weighs 3 times more than you do.
Right. Yeah, and the cats are fighting, but you're the one who's going to lose the fight.
Yeah. 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 Anyways.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
It's just instinct. Like, right. Going back to the silver dollar.
Right.
Like, it's just what they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're asking water not to be wet.
Put a 3-year-old in a Willy Wonka chocolate factory and ask him not to take a lick.
Yeah. Like, here's what I would genuinely say to someone like that. You either want a Planet Aquarium or you want silver dollars.
Right.
If you want silver dollars,
you don't
have silver dollars.
Yeah, and you don't want a Planet Aquarium.
Yeah, I get it a lot with koi and goldfish tanks. And for koi tanks, my first answer is there's no such thing as an appropriate koi tank. For goldfish keepers, most of the time it's, well, you shouldn't be keeping goldfish. But sometimes it's, you either get something hard enough that it may take them some time to decide they want to eat it.
Often Anubias plants can be okay with goldfish.
Some swords, like a sword in a pot or something like that. Usually they will mostly leave those things alone.
Right.
Or you're getting stuff that you think might grow fast enough that they won't eat all of it right away. So duckweed, hornwort, really cheap stuff that you can replace from time to time.
And with duckweed, you're going to replace. I mean, they're going to eat it.
Yeah.
They're just going to eat it.
Like, you could maybe keep a separate culture of it that you're going to introduce, but then that's a food. It's not a decoration in your tank.
I actually have a good story about that.
Yeah.
We have a customer, and I haven't seen her for a while, but she set up a, like, 2.5 on a windowsill with hornwort because I told her if she put a hornwort in her tank, her goldfish is just going to eat it. And she thought, oh, so it's a treat.
Oh, perfect.
So now she's growing hornwort to put in her tank.
That's perfect.
For her goldfish.
Yeah.
Yep. I love it.
Like, that's great.
It's fantastic. It's the same as people who are growing a separate tank of snails to feed their puppers. Whether you see that as a problem or whether you see that as a fun thing that you can do, it all depends on your perspective. Like, how much you're actually enjoying keeping that tank.
Right. Yep. I love it. So that leads me kind of to the next part of the discussion, which is anybody that has ever walked into this store, the first thing you're going to notice is we pretty much have plants everywhere, right? We're almost, I'm not going to say we're not a fish store because we are, but we are just as much a plant store as we are a fish store.
Would you say we're stuffed to the gills?
You're so funny. I think there are 2 tanks upstairs that don't have plants in. Oh, 3 because of Biggie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freshwater. And then there's the 275s. Am I missing one? Freshwater tank with no plants?
No.
No. Why is that?
And the 75s right now are only plant-free just because of what we've determined their use is, not because of the fish that are in there.
Yeah, that's true. Convicts you could keep with Anubias plants just fine.
Mm-hmm. And chewel cichlids and geos.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, going back to the question.
Yeah.
You asked, so why are there plants in all these tanks?
Mm-hmm. Actually, this is a perfect question for you,
I
Charles,
know.
Because you're not a Planet Aquarium guy. I mean, you're kind of getting pushed into it.
I'm getting pushed into it.
But that's not your first instinct.
So I'm going to start off with the context of, I joke around with our customers a lot here that, like, it would probably be more accurate to say that I have fish tanks that happen to have plants in them rather than a Planet Aquarium, because I don't frame it that way in my head.
Right.
But here's the reality. The fish like them. It's easier to maintain than a plant-free tank. And it just looks better.
It does.
It just does.
It kind of goes back to our initial part of the conversation when we were talking about snails with a balanced ecosystem. If you have a tank that just has fish in it, that's kind of a little bit of a sort of monoculture. If you have fish and you have plants, you've immediately diversified the ecosystem.
That's very true. And like, I cannot tell you how often, at least 4 times a week, and I'm being conservative, I have a conversation that runs to some variation of, So have you ever thought about keeping a plant aquarium? Oh, no, I'm not sure I'm capable of handling the extra work.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you this. I genuinely think there are plants out there that are easier than plastic plants.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
a planted aquarium, easier to maintain than a tank with plastic plants.
Oh, yeah. Like, here's the thing. A healthy Anubias doesn't let algae grow on it.
Right.
And I've grown Anubias in tanks without lights on them.
Shh, don't tell people that. They need lights.
I know.
Okay, Anubias is one of the few exceptions that ambient light can actually keep Anubias just fine.
And a lot of the people who have problems growing Anubias are trying to grow Anubias in tanks that are designed to be like fully planted.
Right.
And
that's
like,
true.
If you grow Anubias under crazy high lights, the Anubias is going to struggle and algae is going to love it.
It's going to love it.
But yeah. I want to take the opportunity here to say something that we've said before. And since we're getting opinionated here, I don't even feel the need to disguise this.
No, that's kind of the point of this is to be, yeah.
Fishless cycling is stupid.
I don't like fishless cycling.
Because here's the thing. If you start with a proper aquarium, which to me, a proper aquarium is a, let's call it a bioactive aquarium.
Yes.
One that has live plants in it.
Yes.
One that has natural rock, natural wood, and a good planted aquarium substrate. You don't need a fishless cycle.
Right.
Because it's cycled. It's cycled when you start.
Right.
Because it has beneficial bacteria in it.
The cycle has started when you start. It's not cycled.
Right.
The cycle has already started.
But rather, you have the beneficial bacteria you need if it comes from an existing tank, and then you can slowly build your population as you need to. You don't need to start cold with adding a piece of shrimp to your tank or something like that.
You don't need to do it.
Because you're already pretty much the way there.
I really want to know where that started. Like, why is that fishless cycle a thing?
I think it's just because a lot of people intuitively, and I will say erroneously, believe it's the most humane. Like, you're not putting anything at risk.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. And as an example to answer this question, one of my favorite conversations I've ever had here was someone said, so when can I add plants into my tank? And I said, is your tank set up now? And they said, no. And I said, now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it comes from like what is conventionally considered to be a beginner aquarium, which is pretty inert. Inert gravel, inert decor. So if you're coming from that and you're like, how do I get this tank ready for fish and have the beneficial bacteria that I need? And then you may need to add ammonia or some source of it to populate it. But I don't think people realize how rich established tanks are in beneficial bacteria and how much plants contain.
Yeah.
By the way, just a side note, any saltwater person that's still listening after all this freshwater talk, same thing.
Yes.
Only corals.
Yeah.
Actual live rock. I want to know where this fishless cycle, like it is the trend. It is what people are doing. People are coming and going, oh, to do an aquarium, I have to do a fishless cycle.
Yeah, and it takes like 6 or 8 weeks.
Why? And who's saying this? If you know, by the way, I have not found where the source of this is or whose idea it was. But I want to know. I want to hear from a genuine level why you think this is better than doing it with fish.
Honestly, it's rampant on message boards,
yeah,
forums and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think it's people who think that they're doing it the better way, like Charles was saying.
They do. So I know the dry start method was now I had his name and it's gone. Whoever came up with a dry start method no longer does it, no longer likes it. The reason that I know that is because I got onto one of the forums, and I'll have to figure it out, because I was having I was struggling with the dry start a couple of years ago.
That was when we were doing the Glosso.
The Glosso one, yeah.
Yeah.
And
like, eternal okay, nemesis. The way to carpet Glosso is a dry start.
Yeah, and he chimed in, and I think it was George Farmer.
Whoever it was. Or was it George Farmer or Tom Barr?
It was Thomas Barr.
There we go.
It was Tom
we
Barr.
Got there.
Yep, it was Tom Barr.
That was so fun to watch happen, by the way.
Yes, it was Tom Barr. He said, this is what's happening. This is why it's not working. Or this is what's not working. What's going on? And the guy who invented the dry start method said, yeah, I don't like that method anymore. I want to know who said fishless cycle. And do you still think it's the right way to do it?
Right.
And if you do, why? That's genuine questions, by the way. I'm not challenging that topic. I don't see the benefit.
Well, and here's the reality is, us here at this table, we've only heard of this method from a guy, from a guy, from a guy, from a guy. It's like,
I want to hear the source.
It's so far removed from whatever it is that I think all semblance of the logic is just gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm genuinely trying to think. So one of the more common ways to try to do a fishless cycle right now is dosing ammonia in the tank.
Yeah.
Right. I have had dozens, if not hundreds of people come in and asking me why it's taking so long, and only one of them did it successfully. One.
Yeah.
Those like 80 other people had to, like 4, 5, 6, 7, right. 8 weeks in, had to shift gears and do something completely different because that wasn't working.
Because you're not, you're introducing the food, not the organism.
Yeah.
Well, there. It's a little bit more complicated than that. But the
it
bigger problem
is with you.
I know. But it all boils down to, in order to do pure ammonia successfully, you need precision.
Right.
Slightly too high, you kill off all the beneficial bacteria you've been trying to grow.
That's the crazy thing about ammonia. It is food for bacteria, but it is also toxic to bacteria.
Well, the really tricky part in cycling a tank is nitrite above 5 parts per million is toxic to the bacteria that eats it.
I'm going to say something gross, but that's kind of like poop is toxic to people.
What?
Right?
Yeah.
It's gross, but that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because it's different bacteria that consume ammonia and produce nitrite. Those are different than the ammonia that consume nitrite and produce nitrate.
Yeah.
And at this point, even if you're like, well, I don't trust cycling just with plants. I don't trust cycling just with media. The beneficial bacteria products that we have right now are good enough that you can cycle just with those.
True.
Aquavitro seed, anybody I have talked to who has used it has been able to see results just with that.
I've used
makes
it
sense.
Twice. In both cases, I've used actual live rock, but in both cases, it's also, it didn't hurt anything. So for like $8, why not?
Yeah.
Right.
you know?
It's good stuff. That's part of the problem that we run into when we do our podcast is we also drink good beers. and Charles drinks good bourbon.
Well, and usually we look up the answers to our questions before we start. And this time, we're just ranting.
Nick's going to have a hell of a time editing this.
For those of you listening, by the way, Nick is the person who edits all of our podcasts. He does an amazing job. And we try to put notes in while we're recording this saying, Nick, edit this part out. Nick, don't edit this part out. Nick, leave this in. Oh, Nick shouldn't have said that. Fix that. So in some of this, Nick, I would like you to leave a little bit of this in so that our listeners can appreciate you. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, you'd hear a lot more distractions otherwise. I'm going to say distractions and not naughty language.
Or just rants. Oh, crap. I just offended like 37,000 people. I probably shouldn't say that.
So what other planted aquarium questions do we need to address? Have we done most of our rants? Or do we have another one?
I got one.
Go.
So I've got this nice planted aquarium light. I have it on for 8 hours a day. I'm dosing with Seachem Flourish as per the label. I'm testing my water and everything is where it should be. And in this example, like they give you the numbers and you're like, yeah, that's where those should be. I still can't grow plants. They show you a picture. What do you expect to see in that tank? I had this happen the other day.
Buenos Aires Tetris?
Had nothing to do with fish.
Mm. Bad light?
It was a good light.
Direct sunlight?
Nope.
Still blue gravel.
Yeah, there we go.
I knew you'd get there.
Blue gravel does not grow plants.
Except for that one person who messaged us with a problem with what we were saying about blue gravel. That could grow plants.
Really old blue gravel might be able to grow some plants.
Nature, here's the thing. Nature is insane.
Yeah.
And every time we say anything here won't work, there's some guy in Big Graphics has it working perfectly.
Yeah. And you know what that person was growing in their blue gravel? Stuff like Amazon swords that wants a lot of nutrients in their substrate. So if you have blue gravel and never vacuum it out, you might have enough nutrients to grow plants.
So why doesn't clown puke grow, blue gravel grow plants?
The first really big hurdle is it's plastic coated.
Yeah, at plastics, best it's inert.
Plastics is the answer.
Yeah. Like, the plants have a hard time just hanging on to that.
Yeah.
So rooting in by itself is a problem, and that makes everything else gaining nutrients, like, you know, staying in place so that it can photosynthesize, orient itself. That makes everything else harder.
Right.
So I don't know how else to more get into that. It's just like, that's literally the root problem. Yeah.
It's one of the cheapest upgrades you can do to make your aquarium more habitable to plants.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the times it's like at most a $50 thing to do to change out your completely useless to plants inert gravel for like eco complete or something that just has some value to it.
I had one of those forehead hand slap moments with someone with blue gravel. Blue gravel. My plants won't grow. I went through all of these little things like, oh, it's inert, it's plastic. No, and she just was like disagreeing with me. Like, I'm not, she was uncomfortable with the descriptions that I was giving her. And then I said, are you a gardener? Oh, yeah, I grow some great tomatoes. I went into her garden a little bit. What's the basis of good gardening? Good soil. And then hand slap.
Oh.
Perfect sense. How do you grow good plants in a garden? You start with good soil. How do you grow good plants in an aquarium? You start with good soil.
Mm-hmm. I know there are going to be some really techie people that are going to chime in on our generalist terminology here.
So eco-complete is crap.
We love eco-complete, by the way.
We do love eco-complete. It's technically an inert substrate. What makes it different than plastic coated gravel is that it's not plastic coated gravel.
It's porous.
Thank you.
Gosh. It's always good when you can get a good jinx going.
I know, nice job.
But like that, what would that be? Porousness? Porosity?
Porosity.
Porosity.
That porosity allows the plant to actually do something. It gives it something to hang on to. It, like, that detail alone makes all the difference.
But it's more than that. The porosity of EcoComplete is home for microorganisms. Right? A plastic-coated thing is just that thing. But if it's porous, even if the pores are microscopic, that's where microorganisms can live and process stuff and feed plants.
Wait, are you saying that we began this podcast talking about the importance of biodiversity in plant and aquarium and ending this podcast talking about the importance of biodiversity in plant and aquarium?
Because even on the microscopic level, it's important.
What?
That's it. There's the big takeaway. You know, I love it when we have this organic discussion about microdiversity and whatever it is we're discussing. Yes, I use the word organic on purpose. And we come into this full circle agreement about here's what's going on. Diversity.
Mm-hmm. And like personally, there's all sorts of arguments for all sorts of different planted aquarium substrates. We use here for our plant propagation, and I'm personally more of a fan of a mixed substrate.
Ooh.
for more diversity.
A diverse substrate?
Because I have EcoComplete, I have sand, and I have soil in my tank at home. Here for our plant propagation tanks, we use a mix of potting soil and gravel. But not coated gravel. Dang it.
Not coated gravel. So what you're saying, Amy, is diversity is important. Branching out is important. Wearing a mask hides you from the world.
Careful there.
Yeah, that's where I was going with that. That was it. Diversity.
Yeah. Think yep. about what an ecosystem is like and try and replicate that. That's all we're trying to do here.
Right.
And here's the thing. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. The stakes are so low with a crypt.
Yeah. And honestly, with most plants, I think planted aquariums, more than any other type of aquariums, are about experimentation.
Yeah, I agree.
Plants are generally hardy, generally able to bounce back really well, pretty forgiving, and honestly, pretty cheap.
Right, right. And they reproduce regularly, so you can have your little, I don't want to experiment with this one, so keep that one in a safe place, and then you always have that to pull from.
Yeah.
And you're not a failure if a certain plant just doesn't do well in your tank. It just means that your ecosystem doesn't support that plant. There's a plant out there, and unless you have silver dollars, there's a plant out there that can do well in your tank.
Yeah, I right. used to make jokes like this with Ken all of the time. He's a former employee who is a pretty dedicated plant person. Mm-hmm. And he cannot grow Rotalas, and I cannot grow Ludwigias. And that's just the reality of how we keep our tanks. I've probably thrown 3 or 4 different species of a Ludwigia in my tank, and I've killed them all. He's done the same thing with Rotalas. I don't buy Ludwigias anymore, but my tank looks pretty good.
Right. One's a root feeder, and one is a water column feeder.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's a whole different topic.
He loves dosing his tank, and I love forgetting that mine exists. So
yeah.
That's how it goes.
Well, thanks for putting up with this one, guys. I know I kind of blindsided you with what was the topic. The anticipation was kind of like, that was part of the fun.
Yeah.
You guys were a little nervous about what was going on. So next time I'm going to come up with something that's going to make you go,
Yeah, this time you just gave us an excuse to rant.
I know, right? And I think that was part of the fun.
So if anybody else has some rants to give us, we do have a members group on Facebook now. If you go to the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery page, you can find the podcast listeners group, mm-hmm. which I would love for you guys to join. But you can also just send any of your angry messages to podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com as well.
Mm-hmm. You can direct them at an individual if you would like. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I've said some things tonight that angered someone.
And I yep. will forward them to Charles.
Yes. And by the way, we will respond as nicely as the question is worded.
Ooh, that's fun.
Ooh, right.
We've only gotten lovely messages we from have, you guys so far. So please, if you do have some comments, requests, suggestions, we would love to hear them. Having conversations about aquarium stuff is why we do this. So please send them to us.
Thank you so much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.